Good morning, and I would like to say thank you for the invitation to good morning, and thank you to the invitation to come and address this audience on a number of topics this morning. When Giovanni asked me to do this presentation around our emergency medical system, it was very difficult for me to think how to put this in a short presentation. Across the United Kingdom, and in particular England as a country, there has been a quiet revolution in healthcare over the last 2 years, and we are kind of coming to the end of a very large project that has very much been consumer-led and government-led in terms of changing the way that we practice, changing the way that patients experience our national health system. So what I'm going to describe to you is a system that is still in a great deal of change. I'm going to try and describe the key elements of those changes, what patients really do experience, and also particularly the changes to roles for emergency nurses, which I'm sure is one of the key things that you'll be interested in. Okay. This really was our current government's target. They wanted to completely reform healthcare, and they really were elected into power off the back of this initiative. And they had said to people, your National Health Service is definitely safe with us. We have totally socialised medicine paid wholly through taxation, and the people of the United Kingdom want that to continue. And they're very proud, we are very proud of our national health system, but it had gone through some 11, 12 years of disinvestment in the previous government, so we had a long way to go to try and bring this up to what we would see as a modern and dependable service. They wanted to change the way that patients experience the National Health Service, and we saw real differences in the level of care that was offered, in the types of services that were offered across the whole of the country. So it would depend on where you lived and the type of problem and issue that you had as to whether you really did receive optimal care or not. The biggest change that we have seen is that we have looked at the National Health Service across a whole system, and very much the issues around waiting times and capacity have always been seen as the emergency department's problem, and that's no longer the sense, that's not tolerated anymore. If we can't admit patients into beds, then the whole system has to change, and the whole way that we manage patients from admission right the way through to discharge has certainly been revolutionised. And the government went out there and asked the public, what do you want from your National Health Service? And they gave them an extremely long list, but they prioritised that list very clearly. And way at the top of this list was this issue around, I do not want to wait for anything. I don't want to wait in the emergency department. I don't want to wait to see for a consultation with a surgeon. I don't want to wait for an outpatient appointment. I don't want to wait for a bed. I don't want to wait for anything. And as you know, the British are a fantastic nation of people who wait, and I blame our American colleagues. They have managed to bring that, you know, don't wait for anything kind of culture into the British people. And they no longer would stand for that length of time that it would take them to receive their optimum care. This is a picture of a typical day in the National Health Service in England. These are Department of Health figures just for England. So on a typical day, this is what happens. A million patients will phone their general practitioner, their primary care practitioner, and they will either, on that morning, they will either want to have an appointment to see their general practitioner, or they will want a home visit. Of that number, about 11,500 of them will require some emergency transport into our hospital system for further definitive care. 33% of that million will at some time during that day or the next 48 hours attend the emergency department, either sent by their general practitioner or they will bring themselves there because they're not happy with the decision their general practitioner has made. Very often they want a second opinion, even though what we tell them is exactly what their general practitioner had said in the first place. One in four patients will be children, and we have very few departments that are purely for children. One in 10 of those patients are over the age of 75. We have an increasingly elderly population. 16% of that total of 33,000 who come to the emergency department will need to be admitted, and again, a quarter of that number are elderly patients. So what did we do to try and change the way that we managed our health care? Basically, what we had seen was that the National Health Service was almost under siege. We could not cope with the numbers that we were seeing in the organisation, in the bureaucracy that we were working in, and we basically wanted to change. And we were not happy that patients were waiting some 6, 12, 18, 24 hours. We'd actually got to the point where patients were being discharged from the emergency departments because they never actually managed to get into an in-hospital bed. And so nurses were being expected, emergency nurses, who, you know, I don't want to see those patients for a very long time. That's not why I'm an emergency nurse. We were having to change the physical layout of the emergency departments to deal with washing patients, feeding patients, making them drinks. And this is not my idea of what emergency nursing is or indeed should be. And certainly my colleagues felt the same. So the government decided that they would impose, and I mean impose, a number of targets. There were financial gains and financial retribution if you didn't meet these targets. The first of the targets, they came into place in 2004, so we had some time to get to the point that we are now. But most of them basically said that if a patient rings up to see their general practitioner, then the GPs have... must see those patients within 48 hours. They have to have an appointment. Because one of the problems with not having a GP appointment is the fact that if they're told, well, you're sick today, but I can see you 2 weeks on Tuesday, and that is not too far from the truth, then the patients would obviously think, I can't wait that long, I'll go to the emergency department. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'm sure they'll see me if I go there. We've had increasing numbers of nurses, primary care nurses who work with general practitioners to deliver some of that care, literally because we don't have enough general practitioners. So a lot of the nurses have taken on quite new roles and quite extensive roles to deal with particular parts of that service. So here's the one, here's my favourite target. By 2003, March in 2003 last year, no patient, and I mean no patient, is allowed to wait in the emergency department from admission to discharge more than 4 hours. And in some of the subsequent presentations that I'll do throughout the day, I will expand on some of these. And by 2004, we were told that the average waiting time for any patient was to drop to 75 minutes. Okay. Now, I have to say that the last target here has not been enforced. The vast majority of us are not actually seeing patients in 75 minutes, but that is something that we are expected to strive towards. Now, if I was to say to you now that I said to you that we have both monetary, there are financial gains and there are financial penalties. At this moment in time, what we have is a system where every month the percentage that we have to achieve goes up. It started at 90%. Every emergency department has to achieve 90%. We all get to see across the whole of England how well every single emergency department is doing. You can see that level of competition has been introduced. So we have league tables to see how well you're doing. If you don't reach your targets, then the government send in, the Department of Health send in a team of individuals who will make you change your system in order to meet your targets, which I guess for us will be the ultimate insult. It basically says you're not doing the right job, therefore we'll get somebody else to come and tell you how to do it. It's a bit like Big Brother, this, isn't it? George Orwell will be proud of them. So basically this month we're expected to achieve 94% of all our patients are to be seen in the emergency department within 4 hours. I have to tell you that my hospital for the last 2 months has achieved 98%. And by the end of this year we will expect to reach 100%. So every single patient will be expected to be seen in and out within 4 hours. Now, it wasn't that simple to fix this problem because, and I put here an international problem, this is true, isn't it? This, you know, if you're sitting here now thinking these are exactly the problems that we have. The capacity in the hospitals was insufficient. We have competition every single day for the available beds between the patients who are coming in as emergencies and those patients who want their elective surgery in particular. We had many, many delays in discharging patients, and more often it wasn't due to clinical need, it was due to kind of system problems in trying to get them out at the other end. We'd have people in acute beds that really did need to be in either rehabilitation or some intermediate care. I can see you all going, yes, that's our problem. And diagnostics are not 24/7. We still find it very difficult out of hours, out of normal office hours, to give patients the right level of diagnostics. So many were being admitted inappropriately. They didn't need to be there, but they couldn't go home because we couldn't discharge them due to the fact we didn't have some diagnostic information. So I guess these are the elements of the service that have changed most dramatically. Okay. And we have managed to bring together a whole hospital, a whole systems approach to bringing patients through the system and taking them out the other end. It almost feels like we're pushing them in and other parts of the hospital are pulling them out at the other end. The first thing that we were encouraged to do was to stream patients into various routes, if you like, when they arrive in the emergency department. Now, many hospitals already did this. They have patients that have, with minor problems and patients with major problems. We now have other routes, so we'll have resuscitation, majors, minors, primary care, and also self-care. So the triage nurses in particular will discharge patients at the point of entry. We have been given some additional resources to do this, both medical and nursing staffing, and it is very true that the better you do, the more they throw at you, the more resources you will get. So there is, again, we have this saying in England where they dangle a carrot in front of us. Yep. So there is an incentive for you to do this. So the more you achieve, the more you get. They tried it the other way. They tried to, you know, the worse you were, the more money they threw at you to try and get you to get to improve your services, but that kind of didn't work. So they've gone to the other side now, and it certainly has that had good implications. One of the kind of biggest revolutions, and the part that I want to move on to now, has been the demarcation of roles. Nurses have really, really taken on some incredibly autonomous roles within our health service, because we just didn't have the senior medical staff to be able to support this. Our junior medical staff now are changing the way that they are trained, they're changing their working hours and they're changing their contracts, and they really are very much in a training grade. They have literally held up the National Health Service for many, many years, and that is set to change certainly within the next 2 years. We've had emergency nurse practitioners for many years, senior nurses who will make decisions to manage certain groups of patients, usually under some guidelines and protocols of practice, and they will independently manage and treat and discharge those patients. And I know those models are certainly evident in other places across the world. We have changed some of our primary care physicians and nurses in the emergency department, bringing some of the general practitioners into the emergency departments and some of those practice nurses to look at particular groups of patients who, I guess you should say, should go to their general practitioners, but certainly had come into the emergency department. The benefits of doing that are that we have taken on many more of the minor illness and major illness skills that we didn't have, and we've also given some of the GPs and those practice nurses the injury skills that they didn't have. So there's been real collaboration between those services now, and we certainly have nurses who work across both primary and secondary care very, very comfortably. There are many more allied health professionals now who are part of the emergency teams. The physiotherapists really do work very much like the emergency nurse practitioners, yet they will have their own caseflow, particularly seeing patients with knee injuries, ankle injuries, and particularly those patients with long-term problems and chronic conditions. We also have social workers as part of the team, and the team just feels that much more cohesive. And obviously, if you bring all of the people to where the patients are, then you will increase you will decrease the time it takes for those patients to be seen, because the referrals have reduced quite dramatically, because the team members are literally standing next to you waiting for those patients to be managed. And the latest incentive really is to look at what we call emergency care practitioners. These can either be paramedics currently working purely in pre-hospital care, or nurses who are working purely at the moment in hospital care, and again transferring those roles. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in one second. We have increased the choice to patients quite dramatically. The number of places they can go now to get healthcare is quite astonishing. And most of this has been focused on taking the patients away from the emergency department. There is certainly a growing sense that patients in the emergency department should be those patients with the most urgent conditions. And patients with minor problems, particularly minor illness and minor injury, shouldn't be in the emergency department at all. I'm not convinced that that is a consensus view across the UK, but certainly that that is part of this government plan, is to divert patients away from our true acute emergency departments. National Health Service Direct is a telephone advice line that patients can ring at 24 hours a day, at any time of the day, the night, the year. And they can get advice. They are taught to either by trained counsellors or by nurses who use a computer decision support to reach a decision about whether the patient needs healthcare now, self-care, whether the patient needs to come into hospital. Primary care walk-in centres are small units, usually nurse-led and or GP-led units, where patients can literally just turn up. The vast majority of these are built in busy housing estates, busy shopping centres, where real public access and where the public are most of the time. So you can see they're extremely busy. They've become very successful. And obviously, the nurses and the GPs there will make decisions about whether the patient is treated and managed at that site or whether they need to attend a major emergency department. Usually working out of these areas are general practitioner out of our services. The other thing that the government have allowed the general practitioners to do, up until in literally 4 weeks' time, I would imagine every single general practitioner in England will sign a contract that signs away their responsibility for 24-hour care of their patients, both legally and morally. They've had a responsibility for the 24-hour care of the patients within their service. The government have now said, if you don't want to be responsible for them during out-of-hours time, then if you sign this contract, then we will take that work away from you. There is no incentive for any general practitioner to not sign this contract. So they will all say, I don't want the out-of-hours work anymore. So there will be an increasing role again there for nurses, I believe. We've opened many medical assessment units. These are areas where patients will stay for a maximum of 48 hours. GPs can admit directly into those units. They're staffed by both senior doctors and senior nurses. Diagnostics will occur. Patients may go home from those units, or they may come into the hospital. And traditionally, those patients would all have come to the emergency department, and they would more often than not be quite complex medical cases that the patients would need an awful lot of diagnostics. They would need a great deal of time and attention in the emergency department, and they were certainly the group that had the longest, most extended stays within the emergency department. They were the patients that we found really hard to get them into, medical beds in particular. We've also opened clinical decision units. The CDUs are based either within the emergency department or co-located to the emergency department, and we will admit patients directly into those units for diagnostics. The maximum length of stay usually is 5 to 8 hours, and they may be waiting for blood tests or the further diagnostics, so they don't need to stay in the emergency department. They can move into those clinical decision units. The maximum length of stay in the CDU will be 12 hours. I would have to call them breach avoidance units, because the only way that the vast majority of us can meet our four-hour targets was to move those patients into clinical decision units. They really are an extension of the emergency department, but they're not classed as emergency department patients anymore. The CDUs are staffed by emergency care physicians and emergency nurses, so we've just put them somewhere else, and then they don't get, and we can discharge them from the ED into our clinical decision unit. Creative. We've also improved our IT systems, so we can talk to our general practitioners more than we could, and we can talk in hospital and improve those systems. Okay, so this is really what this integrated model of care is about, and we don't just talk about emergency departments anymore. We talk about unscheduled care, because it really is right the way through from the primary care physicians and complicated medical cases. So we've simplified some parts of the access to the National Health Service, lots more choice, lots more ways of getting the patients into the system, and an improved efficiency of moving patients through that system and also discharging them at the other end. We have new prioritisation systems now for our 999 emergency calls. If you dial 999, you do not automatically get an ambulance anymore. The calls are categorised into A, B and C. All Category A calls are the emergent calls. But Category C calls, we had, I don't know if this is the case in Italy, but we have patients who dial ambulances purely as a taxi service to the emergency department. Well, they don't get their ambulances anymore. So if you phone with, an injured ankle or a nosebleed or whatever it might be, you do not get an ambulance. You are given alternatives and choices as to how you take yourself to your nearest emergency care facility. And we're now seeing the development of what I can only describe as emergency care villages, where the traditional emergency department is still there, but around that we have the medical assessment units, the clinical decision units, the general practitioner out of our services, the walk-in centre, and many of them are all on site, and we have to kind of signpost the patients to the right service, and very often we do that from triage. The next the last bit that I want to talk to you about are some of the new roles, and I think many of the roles for emergency nurses have developed out of this change in the way that we work the service now. And there are a significant number of opportunities for emergency nurses, particularly senior nurses, to develop in their autonomy and the way that they practice, and these are just some of them. The traditional nursing roles are very much still there. Patients still need fundamental care. They still need to have effective communication and information. So the traditional parts of what I still believe are our nursing roles are still very much there, but they are changing. We also have issues around recruiting nurses, and we have a national shortage of nurses. So many more support roles to nurses and qualified staff have grown up out of that need. And again, we're now seeing very different levels of these assistant practitioners. Some of them have quite advanced skills that you would probably acknowledge as those of a junior staff nurse, of a junior nurse. So I want to talk a little bit about the nurse consultants and the nurse clinicians. The nurse consultants are a small number of nurses, and they are the most senior nurses. And this is a national project. And the goal is for these nurses literally to have the same status as our medical colleagues. I can also tell you that they have similar earning capacity to some of our medical colleagues, which has been quite a revolution. So this helps with the overdraft. One of the problems that we had was nurses would get to a level of seniority and then they would have to make a choice. They became managers or they moved into education. There are a number of nurses, and myself included, I wanted to be an educator, but I couldn't understand how you could be an educator, be a professor in a university, and not work within emergency nursing. This certainly wouldn't feel right to me. I'd need to work within that service to be able to teach and educate and develop services. So the nurse consultants, we have this ability to work across education, research, and still remain as those clinical experts and day-to-day patient contact. And although I don't have a caseload in the way that the emergency nurse practitioners would, then I certainly still have a responsibility to manage patients with other members of staff, and that's where my kind of education and developmental role would come in. The best part of the nurse consultants is this, in that those senior clinical role models are right back in the middle of the emergency department, and we had really lost our role models from nursing, which was quite frightening really. We had taken the best people out and put them in either management, pure management posts or pure education posts, and the kind of art and science of what emergency nursing is had been lost. So we've put them right back in there now. So that really is an exciting role, and there are moves to have 2 and 3 nurse consultants in each of the emergency departments, just as you will have 2 and 3 medical consultants. We've just about started a training programme for nurse consultants, and we're actually calling them nurse registrars. So again, there is that kind of formal recognition of their training process. The other group of senior nurses that that are increasing in numbers are the nurse clinicians. These are nurses who don't want to be involved in the management, the day-to-day running. They really just want a clinical caseload. They're educated to a very high level, a master's in clinical practice, which is very much taught around the biomedical model. It is, a snapshot of medical training. They are usually the most senior clinicians before they take on this, this extra academic training. They are definitely the clinical experts. They will certainly hold down a very, very large patient caseload. And they are, at the moment, substituting some of the medical posts, where, particularly where we can't recruit into registrar and senior medical posts. And these nurses are actually taking those posts at this time and delivering a fantastic level of care, because they are highly trained clinicians, but they have a very nursing focus. So you have this, I think, the best of both worlds, really. The emergency care practitioners, this is really a project that's in its infancy, but this was to think about particular groups of staff that could work across both primary and secondary care. And we wanted to develop the service, and particularly to reduce the emergency department's attendance. So this really, again, is another way of avoiding admission. Our paramedics at this time, more often than not, will attend to a patient's home or an incident. They'll go to a call and they will automatically bring the patient into the hospital. And this was to give them the skills and the knowledge and the abilities to make decisions out in the community as to whether the patient really did need to come into hospital or not, or whether they could take them to a completely different service, or whether they should ring social services and the patient really didn't need to come into the emergency department. So it really is about improving care at the point of contact, and that doesn't have to be the emergency department. At the moment, we are really struggling with what level of education. The vast majority of our paramedics have very little academic qualification at all, whereas the nurses have high level of academic qualifications. So it's been, it is difficult at this time to give you a definitive answer as to what these individuals may or may not be doing. But certainly we will see the nurse stroke paramedic role developing in the very very near future. Okay, so I just want to quickly give you some examples then of this, the quiet revolution, and these are things that are going on today in the National Health Service as I stand here and speak to you. General practitioners no longer have to direct their calls to a medical practitioner. They will contact the nurse clinicians and they will contact the nurse consultants, and they will discuss their patients and maybe refer their patients directly to those patients, to those senior nurses, sorry. Pre-hospital care is really geared around admission avoidance. If we go to the home, can we administer first aid? Can we get other services involved? Does that patient really need to go into an emergency department? Those primary care walk-in centres, which are placed exactly where the general public congregate, in the future, they will be targeted with dealing with 100% of minor injury and minor illness. So they will increase their role and quite dramatically. There's increasing assessment and advice via either telephone or the internet for patients. You can log on and discuss with the computer your hemorrhoids or your ingrowing toenail and decide where you would like to get some future advice. We were also extending the out-of-hours coverage, and again, traditionally, if you contacted your general practitioner in the night hours, the general practitioner would go to the patient's home. Now, because we have facilities for them to come to the out-of-hour service, mainly in the walk-in centres, then the patients are very often triaged and asked to attend the out-of-hour service. So the GPs actually are able to see many more patients because the patients are coming to them as opposed to having to travel around a whole community. And a great deal more of treatment at home by either paramedics and or nurses. Okay. So, we are completely changing the way in which we manage patients. There is a great deal more of, and I'll talk to you later about see and treat and discharge, nurse-led services are dramatically increasing. But I would not want to say that that nurses are kind of, it sounds like we're sort of taking over, doesn't it? There still needs to be a great deal of collaboration with our medical colleagues, and many of these nurse-led units have telemetry and telemedicine links with other major hospitals and their clinical and medical colleagues. We have assessments, and there have been changes in the law to allow nurses to prescribe from a nurse's formulary, and that will, those law, changes in the law will change again at the end of this year, which will extend that practice. For those, certainly those prescription-only medicines at the moment that we can't prescribe, then we have what are called patient group directions. So under protocol, we can administer from a large range of drugs, and this is actually quite a legal thing for us to do now. I guess we've been doing it illegally for many years, and now we've just formalised our process. Okay. And working across all specialities, and particularly with allied health professionals, has really helped us change the way in which they accept the level of knowledge, the level of skill, and the level of ability of nurses, and really has changed the whole pathway of care for patients. So now these are all very commonplace. Certainly for the nurse practitioners, they will initiate and interpret their own X-rays and make treatment decisions and choices off the back of that considerations. The same with diagnostic tests. And nurses, under a protocol, will also refer particular groups of patients for head CT. Okay, so the future. Well, I think we have, certainly in nursing, we have really changed. There are some really strong nursing leaders in there, and this is no more evident than in emergency nursing. I really have to say that the emergency nurses really have been some of the leaders. We have very, very strong organisations. We also have a newly formed Faculty of Emergency Nursing, which is a competency-based a career framework, which really does give some standards of practice across the whole of the United Kingdom for emergency nurses. I think the key to all of this is that we have put back the role models, and I think this has been exactly the same for my medical colleagues. Because we have had to put the most senior people back on the shop floor, we have had to put those very senior nurses and doctors managing the patients. Again, that's had a large impact on patient care. We've had to look very, very seriously at our skill mix and also the utilisation of staff. Who really is best to perform the care for that patient at the point that the patient needs it? And I think for the first time, what we've done is we've actually looked at roles based on competency rather than on professional groups. So we've really changed the whole picture, I think, of emergency care. But my final slide is this, and this is a big but. We have given the patients so much choice. There are so many places for them to go to now, but I still believe at the end of the day they will take the path of least resistance. They will still go to where they feel is comfortable. They will still go to what they know and what they perceive to be the right place. And I think we've almost given them too much choice here. There have been some really, really positive outcomes of changing our service over the last 2 years. But anything that is government and target-led always has a cost, and there has certainly been a human cost. At this time, it is estimated that nearly a quarter of all of the senior managers throughout our system are on sick leave with stress-related illness. And I think that is almost too high a human cost to bear. Hopefully some of those nurses will come back. I'm hoping they come back. But we've done this. We have reduced waits across the whole service, across the whole system, and we've pulled together all specialities, all professional groups in order to achieve that. I think we, at the end of the day, patients, as I said, will take that path of least resistance, and they will go to where they believe the staff to be knowledgeable, where they believe the staff to be helpful, and where they will receive the care that they want. So I'm not sure that we're necessarily there yet, but I have to say that 2 years down the line, I prefer working in the National Health Service that I worked in this week than I did the one that I described when I last came here 2 years ago. Thank you.